Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Stone. How was your weekend?
It was great. You know, we went to Ecuador for the day.
That's right, on Saturday. Spent a quality 12 hours there.
That was a lot of fun. But how many, did we do like 18 or 20 interviews that day, didn't we?
Yeah, there was a lot. It was the, Ecuadorian Chamber Festival something?
Well, my primary memory is the salsa. And I brought some of that stuff home with me. Did you try the salsa?
That was too hot for me.
It was rather warm. But, you know, I like hot sauce on everything. But that was a lot of fun. We went out there with Don Ely with Corporate Conversations.
Sure.
We did a remote broadcast. And we talked to everybody that is anybody in the Latin world.
Right. We had the consulate, the chambers. We had everybody.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But we've got a great show today. Several guests in the studio. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning is the president, the founder of Digital Tool Factory, Mr. Steve French. Welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks. It's nice to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Digital Tool Factory. I love the business card. The graphic is awesome. Tell us a little bit about what you guys do.
We make custom web applications for small to medium business. We also do public websites and marketing websites, but our specialty or niche is doing custom programming and basically making custom tools for small to medium business.
Now, what's a custom tool?
Basically, it's anything that you really don't like doing
over
but can
over.
Be automated.
That's
yes.
a long list.
Right.
But if it can be automated and it's tedious and you're probably doing it in Excel right now, that's a prime candidate for a custom tool.
So can you give an example of what one looks like in one of your clients?
Sure. A couple of years ago, there was one bank merged with another bank, and they were in different states, and there were different regulatory requirements. And the employees of Bank A had to be certified in Bank B state because
right.
they were transferring back and forth. And so me and the client developed a testing procedure of, you have to, you know you can't make these sort of deposits, but you can make these. And we developed a tutoring and testing procedures for the new employees, which allowed them to get certified at a much faster rate.
Right. So then they could just, before they were allowed to do anything, they had to go through this automated learning experience.
Correct. You log in, you fill this out, you read this, you get tested, you get tested, you get tested, and then you're ready to take the real test, which was
right.
actually fairly expensive to take.
And that way they didn't fail.
Yes. And have to take it again and pay the fee again.
Exactly.
Now, do small business people typically reach out to you and they know that they need and want this stuff and it's available? Or are you having to go out and educate the small business community to let them even know that this kind of thing exists?
Actually, yeah, I get almost all my work by referrals. It's my cold calls have been remarkably unsuccessful. But it's usually an existing client of mine playing golf or doing business with someone who's like, you know, you should really automate this. And I know a guy. And generally, that person will call me. So it's pretty much all referral word of mouth.
So if we had a digital tool that can help you automate that, you'd be interested in your cold calling? Just wondering.
That would be handy, I guess, now that you put it that way.
So, like you said, you had most of your people come referral. Is there been any project that you're like, wow, that's going to be tricky. I don't know if I can do that. Or, you know what, I got a clever little answer for that.
Some things are too big and or just not appropriate for me, like anything for, say, you know, a large, you know.
So I'm trying to say, are your clients the huge companies or are they little companies or somewhere in between?
Usually it's the clients of the huge companies.
So it's a vendor to a larger company.
Correct. It's my average client is a company of, say, 8 to 20 people, and their client is a company of 8,000 people.
Right.
But it's generally small, discrete tasks for those.
Right.
Just for another example, I recently made, a couple of years ago, I made an application for what wound up being the Boy Scouts and the Pinewood Derby. But it wasn't actually for the Boy Scouts, but it was for a company that was doing part of their marketing as part of a joint venture with Lowe's.
Right.
On how to get Pinewood materials. And this was submit your pictures of your Pinewood Derby car and your results, and they get judged. And all these picture submitting and judging happened online.
Oh,
so
cool.
Therefore, you had the experts in 8 states collaborating on which was, in fact, the true Pinewood Derby champion. And they were able to do that all online and fairly easily and painlessly.
Cool.
So what about, talk to us a little bit about the mobile world. Do you play in that arena at all, having the computer stuff talk to the phone and all that?
It's kind of overrated, I think. Or there's something of a gold rush happening right now.
Right.
And there's, in my opinion, there's probably 150 mobile apps to be made each year.
Mm-hmm.
And there's 10,000. Or there's 150 that need to be made, and there's 10,000 actually made.
Right.
So the average quality is very low, and the signal-to-noise ratio is very poor. But some things are very good, like, you know, maps are excellent on the phone and very useful.
Now, do you fool with this, though? Do you design that, or you don't play in that arena? You leave that to the amateurs?
Not the amateurs. And some of it's actually extremely complicated and needs a lot of skill, but I just don't see the merits. And the market's also currently flooded, too.
So you don't think there's enough space for another auto-tune voice manipulator app? You think there's enough? Is that what you're saying?
I think there is enough on that. But it's not a world I live in. It's usually the stuff I build can be viewed on a mobile phone, and it's very standards compliant.
Right.
And you can use it via the web browser on the mobile phone.
But yours is very functional and practical for a B2B client, typically?
Oh, yes. Pretty much exclusively all B2B.
Mm-hmm.
So how about this, I don't know if this is the right word. We were talking about this last week, gamification, where you people can go into your website and you're wanting to incent certain behaviors. Mm-hmm. And so you give them a chance to earn stuff. I guess it's like Farmville on Facebook, but I'd like
B2B,
to explore something that's
right.
A little more businessy that would incent some behavior around a website. Is that, what do you think about that kind of stuff?
It's the useful part of social networking, I think, from the business world. It's gamification or game mechanics is the term for that. But the best example of that is Wall Street and the Wall Street media, in the sense that, you know, the average broker makes money when you trade. Realistically, you don't need to be making that many trades per year, but your broker wants to convince you to make those trades.
Right.
So therefore, they have the Dow is up. You know, 2 points, and here's something in bright, flashing letters. And your portfolio is only doing 4% the past 2 years, but you're in the 95th percentile. So therefore, you're above or below certain people, which allows you to, whether you want to or not, engage in a status game with other people, which is the true game of, which is the root of game mechanics. It's I am here and other people are below me, or I am here and all these people are above me. But it's a clear pecking order.
And then but have you ever helped a business in that to kind of use that mechanism to incent behavior?
That was, again, for banking clients.
Right.
It was who could sell the most, I believe, traveler's checks in that instance.
But, like, you could have used it in that online education. You could have kind of had a scorecard. Who's got the highest score? Like, that would be an example of gamification, right?
It would be. We didn't actually do that in that project. But
that's within your scope if somebody wanted to know that? Or
oh, yes, definitely.
Right. So you're not against gamification?
No. It's just
pro-gamification.
I am very pro-gamification, but it's just not appropriate for every situation.
Sure.
And there's also periodically privacy requirements.
Right.
And it's not really that appropriate for every business. It's more on the consumer side.
Right.
It's you run into a lot of problems if you try to do that in a business setting.
Uh-huh.
You don't want to reveal salaries, commissions,
right.
Prior history, or any kind of financial records.
Right.
Lee's an open book. He doesn't care about that.
Transparent.
Everybody knows he's loaded. He doesn't care.
What's your social security number, Lee?
Yeah, give it out.
And so talk to us about social media. What's been your experience with that? Are you guiding people through their application of that? Or what are you telling people if and when they ask you about social media?
I find it a bit overrated for
you
the B2B.
You know what? That's
B2B
a theme
space.
With you, Steve. You know,
he's a little cynical.
You are a little cynical.
Well, no, it's I just think for my client base, which is all B2B. If I were promoting a band, music, a new television show, or something that's B2C or just aimed at young people, then you're in a much more fertile realm for social media. But for most banks, construction, finance companies, a lot of software technology companies, it's just a little goes a long way. If you do need a Facebook page, you do need a Twitter feed can be very helpful for certain kinds of communication, but it's not going to make you rich.
It's also a place to waste a heck of a lot of time, isn't
exactly.
it? When you should have your energies focused somewhere else. So how do you compete out there? Because it strikes me that there are a lot of people that represent themselves to be in your space, whether they truly are or not. How do you rise above the noise? How do you go to market?
It is mostly word of mouth and referral. Actually, no, it's pretty much exclusively word of mouth and referral. So it's just
you just do good work.
Having a good reputation amongst people that know you is invaluable.
Now, when you're coaching your clients, like, because I'm sure they come up to you, I'm sure you have existing relationships, and they're like, "Hey, Steve, you know what? Everybody's on Facebook. Everybody's doing all this stuff. You know, there has to be a way. I'm missing out. You know, this train's going. Everybody's telling me I have to do that. My kid's telling me I have to do that." And are you telling them, you know what, just chill out a little bit. In a B2B setting, yeah. You know, you don't have to go crazy with all this other stuff.
Well, I would say, what was the last dollar you spent because of Twitter?
Right.
Or Facebook.
The Twitter dollar?
Yeah, what did you see on Twitter that goes, "Oh, my, I just have to buy that new type of health insurance." You know, it's never happened.
Right.
Or it's, I don't have clients that are appropriate for it, and not that many other people do either.
Right.
If you're a new band, if you're a new kind of energy drink, or something that's beloved by people 14 to 25, Facebook and Twitter are
good opportunities.
Matches.
What about LinkedIn?
LinkedIn is a handy networking tool, but, and it might be better to advertise with them. I would imagine it would be slightly better per dollar to advertise with them than Facebook or Twitter. But I've never actually had any experience with that.
Right. But what about, you think that using LinkedIn as a means to meet people and to, you know, build relationships?
I found it very handy, especially with research. And just, you can gain a lot of insight on somebody just by looking at their job history. And say, "Oh, they worked here, they worked here, they worked here." Therefore, you can infer that they moved three times.
Right.
And that they are probably this sort of person.
Right.
I wonder what people think when they see mine, because I've bounced around quite a bit, like Little Miss Butterfly. So let's get some real live consulting here. Radio network, business talk-to-talk shows.
Yep.
People use this platform to help them build relationships with their community and to increase their own thought leadership. What kind of custom web applications might a business like us at least maybe entertain? Anything come to mind that might really help a business like ours?
I would say, off the top of my head right now, I can come back with better information in a day or so, but I would say have custom media kits for your guests.
Mm-hmm.
And so as where I'm on High Velocity Radio, and, you know, if I were emailed a code snippet to put on my site, whether via WordPress or Facebook for that matter, or Twitter, or just some custom HTML, is like, cut and paste this into your site. Here's how to do it.
And so that would like play your interview from today and maybe provide a bio or something of you, that kind of thing?
And it would also provide a custom and targeted link back to High Velocity Radio, which helps tremendously with your search engine rankings if you can manipulate the link text.
Which I'm sure we can if we have a pro like you, right?
Well, yes, of course.
What do you think about that? That sounds like a good idea. I like that.
That pre-consulting angle's working for us.
You know what? I like that. We're going to start doing that in every interview exactly. in every show. So how does someone go about shopping for the custom web app guy? Because I don't even know what questions to ask. If I had you and three other people that I met at a cocktail party or that were referred to me because of a golf buddy, I don't know what questions to ask. You tell me you know how to do this stuff, I'm like, okay, cool. You know, let's get together on Tuesday. What kind of questions should someone like me be asking? What kind of things should we be looking for in a custom web app guy?
I would say, first and foremost, talk to their existing clients and see if they're happy or not. Because generally, there are a lot of high-quality programmers out there. There are not that many good communicators. And, you know, full disclosure, I'm not the best at that, and certainly I can't. I'm not good at making the initial sale, but I'm a good explainer, and I'm good at talking through to the root of the problem. Because that's another problem, is that basically, the client doesn't know the technology, and the programmer doesn't know the problem. And so it
that
takes
could be a challenge.
Yeah. And so it takes a bit of work to actually
kind of everybody
see what
get on the same page,
yeah,
right?
See what the problem is and see how the technology can help.
Right. Now, how do you differentiate? Like, what's the difference from a layperson's standpoint, a difference between a web designer and like a web programmer? Is that the same person, or is one more like artsy fartsy and one's more technical?
The web designer would be the more artsy-fartsy person.
Right.
And the web developer or programmer would be the socially awkward
nerd. But is it the same
nerd.
Person? Or do they work together? Is there ever one guy that's both? Or typically not?
It can be the same person. But usually it's both. The web designer is the artist, and it has a couple meanings. Usually it's the artist and person that mocks up the site and makes it look pretty.
Right.
And then hands it off to the programmer, who then turns it into an actual functional website.
Right.
And also handles databases, e-commerce, and all the...
kind of behind-the-scenes stuff.
Exactly, the back end.
Right. And then what is your firm both, or your firm's...
I'm mostly the web development programming side. I do a bit of web design. It's not something I really do on a very cost-efficient basis, just because I don't do it that often. It takes me quite a bit longer.
Right.
But in terms of the actual...
the nuts and bolts of it and making it work and do what it's supposed to, that's your strength.
Correct. You know, it turns this, takes this from a database, it prints out a barcode, which can be scanned at a ticket door somewhere.
Right. That and you can do in your sleep.
Not in my sleep, no.
But you're working an automated way to do that in your sleep.
Yes. And then I'll sleep a lot.
Well, he's wearing socks, so he's not... I knew he wasn't 100% artsy.
Right. That's that's a tip-off.
And old shoes, too.
You can spot them a mile away. What's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you and learn more about your services?
I just go to digitaltoolfactory.net or email me at steve@digitaltoolfactory.net.
All right. Well, before we let you go, there's one thing I wanted to ask you about, and I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this right or not. Stronico. You've got a couple different products or services out. Give us a quick review of those two puppies.
Well, I'm trying to work my way into sort of 50-50 service and 50% product schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And the first two products are called Stronico and Time Producer. Stronico is a contact manager that's actually visual, that you can basically plot your entire life and relationships with other people on sort of an influence map. And, you know, yourself is at the center, obviously, then there's this person, then there's this person, then there's this person, then there's this person. Just so, for example, I am connected to you by my friend Matt Davis, who I went to high school with, who invited me on the show, and we have done business together.
But we don't hold that against you. We actually judge our relationships on their own merit, so you don't have to worry about that.
Thank God. That's very, I know that was worrying me quite a bit.
But this is represented visually.
It's represented visually, yeah. So you are linked, or I'm linked to Matt Davis. And from Matt Davis, I know Lee, and from Lee, I know you. And on the map, I would see the connections and the strength of the connections and the other people that both of you know.
That sounds very cool. We got to have you come back and really talk in depth about that. And then there was one other product you mentioned before we went on the air.
That's a smaller product called Time Producer. I recently started using an online time tracking service called Freckle, basically is a web app that you just press a button and the timer starts, you press it and it ends, and you can track how much time you spent on each project doing what. And for someone that has a fair number of clients and a fair number of projects per client, that is really all the information that it gathers, but it tells you an embarrassing amount of information about your work habits. And
we wouldn't want that.
Well, it tells you how profitable projects are.
Right.
And also, a lot of things, you have a certain hunches and, you know, which are your favorite clients and which are the not favorite. And this provides actual data to back it up. And I was embarrassed at how wrong I was on the profitability of some projects.
Interesting.
Just in how, you know, certain, like 15-minute blocks and 20-minute phone calls and 5-minute phone calls.
Right.
10 times a day. And how much those can add up over time.
Well, I'll tell you what we ought to do. Let's have you come back sometime with a delighted client that's using one or more of these products, and let's get it from their perspective, too. Would you be up for that?
Very much so.
All right. And once again, what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you?
Steve@digitaltoolfactory.net.
Terrific. Can you hang out with us for a little bit while we visit with our next guest?
Oh, of course.
All right. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show is Miss Grace Murphy with the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America, the Georgia chapter. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
What a beautiful name, Grace. You must really enjoy that.
I do.
I have a name that people remember, too, but it just doesn't have that elegant sound.
Not as elegant.
So Crohn's and colitis, I've heard of both. I don't have the first clue about what they are. Give us a little bit of a feel for what that is and what problem you guys are out there solving.
Sure. Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis are inflammatory bowel diseases, just what you want to talk about on Monday morning. but it's inflammation of the digestive tracts. And to some people, that may sound just like a stomach ache or, you know, oh, that might be discomfort. It's actually chronic and debilitating. And almost every person diagnosed with that has to have a surgery or multiple surgeries within their lifetime. And about 42,000 people in Georgia have it. And that translates to about 1.4 million Americans that have this disease.
I bet the salsa that I brought home the other day probably would not help it.
There's a lot, lot of Tums going on in the Crohn's world.
Yes.
Yeah, my mother-in-law has Crohn's.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. She's suffered for a long time. It's not fun.
Not fun at all. It affects, you know, your daily life. It affects your work life. It affects your personal life. Sometimes patients find it very embarrassing, so they don't talk about it. So a lot of our events are really an avenue for our patients to come together, talk about what they experience, their you know, just their everyday lives, and it's really great for them.
Now, is your group, are you just kind of spreading the word education-wise, trying to kind of provide helpful information to people suffering, or are you trying to raise funds for research? What is your mission?
It's kind of twofold. We do raise funds for a cure, as well as put on patient programs and education programs. So we bring doctors from typically around the country, but actually in Atlanta, we have some great doctors here who specialize in mm-hmm. Crohn's and colitis. So it's a great avenue for our patients to learn about their diseases and how to best effectively live their daily lives.
Manage it, right. Mm-hmm. Are there any natural help for this, or is it all medical?
Because there's actually
you're not allowed to talk about that?
Yeah, not really. But I've heard of some patients that some things work for them and right. others don't. I think it really depends on the right. severity of the disease.
Now, on your website, does it have like kind of a forum for people to chat about this, or is it?
Yes, we have several forms. We have one that's really for adults, and then we also have one for teenagers, because a lot more children daily are diagnosed with right. Crohn's and ulcerative colitis.
And what about preventive stuff, just lifestyle stuff? Are there things that if we don't have it yet or don't know we have it yet, are there some things that we can do or not do that might help us avoid? Or are you either going to get it or you're not?
You're going to get it or you're not.
It's a genetic. Yeah.
Oh, wow. And so talk more about these events that you have. What can we expect at a typical Crohn's and colitis event that you might have?
Sure. We actually have one coming up this Thursday, the 28th, at the Concourse in Sandy Springs. It's more of a happy hour event. It's called
Pool. Oh, that's my kind of event.
There you go.
Yeah, it's called Poolside for a Purpose. And Frank Ski from V103 is coming to help us out, as well as Bubby Love, who's kind of their jazz DJ.
Right.
We've got a great live auction and some raffle prizes. So, you know, it's just a great way to support the Crohn's and colitis.
Does it affect any ethnic group more than others?
Actually, it typically affects the Jewish population.
Mm-hmm. Really?
That's a nervous bunch anyway.
Yes, that's probably what it is. And the food's pretty bland, though. That's kind
of
weird.
That's interesting, yeah. Like, you'd think, like, maybe the Cajuns or those that would see a lot of deep-fried chicken or something like that.
No.
That's interesting.
So I see that we got some live auction items for this thing. A round of golf with Lee Cantor? No. Golf with Brian Jordan.
Brian Jordan.
If I were a golfer, I would know who that is. I really don't.
No, he's a baseball player.
That Brian played for the Braves, and now he calls the games for them.
Oh,
so
okay.
He's going to be there along with some of the other Atlanta athletes, and I hear some other local celebrities, so you'll have to check it out and see.
There's some surprise guests.
What time is it? Is it an evening thing?
It is an evening thing. It's from 6:30 to 9:30 at the Concourse.
That's this Thursday. That's coming up. And you got, you got live auction. You got a year membership at the Concourse Athletic Club.
Yeah, that's good.
And that is a first-class club. Well, you know you're a member.
Yeah,
you got deep pockets.
All the time.
A weekend in Vegas, including accommodations and shows. 4 days, 3 nights, Ocean View Room at Intercontinental San Juan. And Carrabba's Italian Grill Dinner for 10.
Yeah, and wine tasting.
Do you even have 10 friends, Lee?
No, overkill for me.
And Carrabba's is actually one of our sponsors, as well as a Concourse and UCB. They're a pharmaceutical company here.
UCB, very cool. What a neat thing. All right.
So you do walks throughout the state, right? That's another.
Correct. I'm the walk manager, actually. So we have a big walk here in Atlanta. It's typically in May. We raise about $200,000 for research.
How many walkers?
We have about 1,000 walkers.
Wow.
This year it was at Centennial Olympic Park. And just great day for the Crohn's and colitis patient group.
Is that a record?
Come out.
That sounds like a lot of money. You raise more than that regularly? Wow.
Yeah, a lot of our events are, we just have some great donors,
That's
some
amazing.
Great sponsors. We really appreciate them.
There's got to be a lot of moving parts to putting all these events together. Tell us a little bit about your day-to-day job. What
you
do
just
you
spend
a lot of time
on
the phone? Or
you
what?
Just say, I'm going to do a walk on this day, and people show up.
I don't think so.
Oh, that would be amazing, wouldn't it?
You need an automated solution for this.
That's what, you need a custom web app.
That would be awesome. Actually, yeah, there are a lot of moving parts because we have sponsors, we have team captains who basically rally their teammates together to raise money. We have logistics, we have the actual location that we deal with. So there's a lot that goes into typically, you know, a walk. It's funny, a lot of people think, is that a full-time job? Yes, it is. It takes about a year to plan the walks. The bigger walks in Atlanta.
Well, if you want to get to raise $250,000, it does. Right. You know, if you're trying to not raise any money, you could probably knock it out in a weekend.
We always appreciate in-kind donations as well. We do love our monetary sponsors, but in-kind donations, we accept those as well.
So how did you get into this line of work? What compelled you to do this kind of thing?
I've been a nonprofit for about 10 years here in Atlanta. So, it was just kind of opened, and I thought this is really interesting, and I think I can make a great impact for these patients. And
that's got to be so competitive, though, I would think, because you're going after, like, when you go secure a sponsorship with UCB, I mean, you're not the first person that has tried to talk with them about contributing, right?
No, and a lot of them have grant processes or applications that we have to write and go through the process. And
but you know all about that world.
Correct. Yes.
Now, there's a whole bunch of you. You're doing the walk. Somebody else is doing other events. Somebody else is raising money, fundraising grants, sponsors. There's a whole
Typically,
crew,
we get our sponsors for each event by ourselves. So,
oh, you're responsible for?
Mm-hmm, correct.
Wow.
So we have a golf event in April. We have a gala that's coming up in January. We also have a really cool program. It's called Team Challenge. Mm-hmm. It's a half marathon program. And coming up in December, they're about to start training for a half marathon in Vegas. They're closing the strip at night. It's going to be all lit up. Yeah,
that's
first time ever. So they're going to start the half marathon. It's going to go down the strip and raise money for Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. It's a great group. They have the pasta party. I mean, it's amazing.
Are there any big celebrities that are involved in Crohn's colitis?
The Pearl Jam guitarist is actually,
real
he has Crohn's disease.
Baby.
Yeah, so he helps with the walks. He helps with Team Challenge. He was at the last.
Does that help getting some celebrity? Or is that like kind of a distraction?
I think it's different for each person. Yeah, right. I think it helps. So
good stuff.
So give us a rundown again, if you will, before we let you go, about upcoming events and particularly this thing coming Thursday, but also kind of give us the calendar, if you will.
Sure. This Thursday, Poolside for a Purpose, it's at the concourse at 6:30. So you can go on to www.ccfa.org and look under the Georgia chapter and get some more information about that. Our next few events are actually out of town. One's in Savannah. We're doing a big kickoff for the walk. August 3rd, and then we're having a walk in Macon, Georgia, which is great. They're very supportive. That's October 2nd, and our Savannah walk is October 30th, doing a little Halloween action in Savannah down there. It's getting a lot of momentum, really great. We have our gala coming up in January, and golf starts out in April.
Man, you have a lot going on. You're right. Savannah's perfect for the Halloween with that whole ghost story.
Yeah.
They have the ghost tour stuff down there. Yeah. That's a neat little town, isn't it?
It is. I love it. It's great.
Well, Grace Murphy with the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America, Georgia chapter, thanks so much for coming down and visiting with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, we'll have you back sometime, and you can give us a post-game report on some of these events and let us know what else is happening.
Great, thank you.
Do you have a website that people can go to if they want more information?
Sure, just the www.ccfa.org.
CCFA, that's it.
CCFA.org, it's that easy. Look for the Georgia chapter.
Well, I know you're headed to Savannah in a few minutes after the show, but can you hang with us for a little while?
Sure. Yet?
All right. Terrific. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the biz dev guy, the business development guy for GATC, Emmanuel Oterski. Did I say that right?
That's right. That's
all
great.
Right. Welcome to the show, man.
Well, thanks for inviting me. My pleasure.
GATC, what's that all about?
Well, GATC was founded about 28 years ago, and what we do here in the States is we operate and manage U.S. subsidiaries of international companies, primarily European companies, because that's where our background is. Our founder and CEO, he's German, and he founded the company a long time ago, and because there was a certain need for it, especially for, you know, companies that do contemplate a market entry in the U.S. or market expansions. Also restructuring businesses for, you know, companies that have been over here, but, you know, ran into some problems, you know, whether it's a high, you know, personnel turnover, loss of
Americans are hard to work with, aren't they?
Not necessarily. if you know how to work with them, I think that's one of our advantages is that we do, you know, help those companies show how to do business over here. Because, you know, a lot of those companies, they come over here and they think, well, you know, I've built up my business for, you know, 60 years in Germany or in Switzerland. And, you know, I can have the same success over here within 1 year. And it's just not going to work that way. That's what we're kind of here for.
What is it like a common mistake that they make?
I think the common mistakes are the over trust coming over here on certain.
Really? They're trustful of Americans?
Well, you do business over here a little differently. Now, keep that.
Buyer beware, I think we call it over here, right?
Maybe they've never watched American movies.
Well, probably. They're all dubbed over there in Germany, but. No, I think it's, you know, over trust when you go into, you know, contract negotiations, for example, you know, to pick the right vendors. Some companies that, you know, go that route over a distributor, for example, which is always a, you know, two-sided sword, because you have, you know, not as much control over your business, of course, in terms of, you know, price strategies and so forth. And you really need to know what to do and what to expect from your business partner over here. And if you don't have any, you know, experience in this market, you're definitely going to run into some challenges that you're not going to be that easy to resolve. And, you know, that's what we're trying to do. So,
do you help your client that's moving over here from Europe kind of assimilate into the country? Because I'm sure when you have an executive that comes to this country, they got to bring their family and stuff. And it's not just you just show up here and now you're in America and you used to live in Germany. Like,
right.
There's a whole, like, my kid's got to find the right school. You know, my wife's got to have something to do. You know, I got to find
like
friends
a relocation
for her. Right. Do you help in that regard as well?
We help them to, like, a certain extent, I'd say. I mean, of course, we do have a large network and we know people that, you know, can help them. You know, we are also very involved in the international school here in Atlanta, which, you know, offers a lot of the European kids to,
right,
you know, get a European education with the, you know, Abitur or the
but isn't
diploma
that
we have there.
Isn't that an important component? Because if that person's not happy, if their spouse and kids aren't happy, can they get kind of like say, you know what, this isn't for me.
If mama's not happy, nobody's happy. We know that.
We try to keep everyone happy, but I'd say the normal case, though, is that there aren't that many people that do relocate. Because, you know, again, we operate the subsidiaries of that company. And
is doing the work for them.
Exactly. And in most cases, of course, once you do hire a, you know, VP here or a key account manager, we do recommend to hire an American for that because they do have better experience also in the market here and for the business. There are some cases where the, you know, company or the client transfers some, you know, technicians over here, sales reps maybe,
right,
for the beginning to, you know, train their personnel over here. And, you know, those people, of course, we do take care of in terms of, you know, finding the right housing, finding the right school districts and you know, visa issues and so forth. So definitely we do
that.
But
for the most part, you are their company here.
Yes. That's actually our slogan is we are you in USA. So
mm-hmm.
The idea is that from day one, you do get a fully functional subsidiary. So we do all the, you know, back office functions in terms of accounting, marketing, customer service, logistics, administration, human resources, all in-house. On top of that, you do have, you know, the options to have an office at our facilities plus a warehouse. So that you don't need to worry about anything.
So they can just ship their stuff to you and then
exactly.
You'll get it out to their American customers.
They can ship it right here and then, you know, we offer dropship solutions for their customers. We make sure that their stuff gets into the country, you know, as fast as possible. We deal with the customs, with all the paperwork. so they don't need to worry
about
anything.
You had me when you said you don't have to worry about anything. That's the value proposition. That's what I'm shopping for. Uh-huh. Do you work in the opposite direction, or is there a firm kind of like you that works in the opposite direction, like if we wanted to go do something in Germany?
Unfortunately, we don't do that.
but there are companies that do. There's probably somebody in Germany kind of doing the same thing.
We have some people that we know that do the opposite. So if, you know, there might be an American company wanting to go to Europe, we can certainly get them in contact with the right people. But we don't, you know, offer that service. We do have a branch office in Dusseldorf, Germany, but we mainly use that for, you know, the initial acquisitions, business development,
right.
You know, in Europe. It's a bit easier to, you know, meet up with a potential client, you know, in Europe, you know, compared to having them fly over here. And, you know, if it doesn't turn out that, you know, we do business together, then it's kind of a wasted trip, even though it's a nice city here. So,
right. So, Lee, we've been having a lot of international conversations lately. I think the universe is trying to tell us something, man.
Well, we met Emmanuel at the Global Connect.
Yes. Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, we didn't. I just met him this morning.
You weren't there. No, Lee was there.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Some of us who were doing our job as networking were there doing that.
I was in the back eating the, they had
all
food
the international
from all the
food,
different.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very cool.
Yeah, we do try to, you know, work closely with the chambers here. I mean, we do get a lot of, you know, leads from them, obviously. And you know, we all work hand in hand, technically. I mean, the idea is that, you know, we, you know, promote business in the U.S. or, you know, in this case, Atlanta, Georgia, of course. And, you know, it benefits them and us in both ways.
So what do you spend your days doing when you're not being a radio personality you are today? what will you do later today? What will you do later in the week? What's your role?
My primary job is the business development for GATC, of course. So, you know, that means that, you know, I always, you know, look for potential clients. I'm very involved in, you know, seminars that we organize or that we're being invited to in Europe. You know, topics are usually, you know, how to do business in the U.S., market entry, U.S., so forth, how to be successful over here. I do travel to a lot of trade shows in the U.S. So whenever there are European companies exhibiting at those trade shows that, you know, do not have a business over here yet, that tells me, well, obviously they are interested in, you know, doing some business here. And, you know, it's our belief that, you know, to be successful in the U.S., you have to have your own office. You have to have a presence. You need to show a certain level of, you know, commitment, seriousness. I mean, that's the key to success to do business here in the U.S.
I want to ask you about this trade show thing. Now, are you exhibiting? Or are you walking the carpet? Or
no,
I'm
basically walk the carpet. But, you know, prior to any trade show, of course, I am in contact already with the companies, telling them, hey, look, you know, I can be there. I'm planning on, you know, being there for 3 days anyway.
Right,
so let's
right.
just meet up. It makes it a little bit easier, you know, instead of having them, you know, again, fly over to Atlanta and meet up with me. So, you know, it helps a lot to just have a face-to-face conversation, tell them, hey, this is what we do. Just makes things easier, I think. So that's what I do. And, you know, besides that, I'm also, you know, responsible for the marketing and PR for our clients. So talking about trade shows, for example, I mean, that's one of those things that we do for our clients, you know, organizing trade shows, doing pre-marketing, marketing campaigns and so forth. So in that sense, since we have about 23 clients at the moment, I'd say for about 10 of them who, you know, use that service, I'm also their, you know, marketing manager here in the U.S.
So you do work that side of the trade. Because the reason I'm asking is I've been party to a number of trade shows in past lives, and I don't think our firms were very good at it. We showed up, we had the pretty booth, we didn't do a great job, and I wondered if you might share some insight, if you have any, on how to get the best return on a trade show. How do you really make that work? Because I don't think, candidly, in the firms I was involved with, which were consulting firms, I don't think we did a very good job. I think we had a nice little diversion trip, but I don't think we ever got any real business.
Right.
I
think you need to do your homework. I mean, check out the trade show. My recommendation is before you start exhibiting at a trade show, go visit the show for maybe 1-2 years to see what the traffic is like, you know, how the visitors are like. And really think about, is this, you know, feasible for me to exhibit there? Then, you know, try to find the right partner, booth builders, that, you know, how to, you know, really expose your business to the best, you know, possible way. You know, make sure that you do have a good booth, of course. You know, that makes a big difference sometimes. If you're just back in the corner, no one's going to find you. Now, if that is the case, then, you know, make sure that you do a lot of pre-marketing, of course. You know, already have a list of potential visitors there that you do would like to invite. You know, send them emails, do an email blast campaign, I'm sure. You know how that works.
I do.
Well, and Steve French's buddy is in the business of providing personnel for booths, too, right. Like the pretty girl with the clipboard and all that, right? Like,
that's the
am I oversimplifying that?
Yeah, it's a much longer description of that, but it's BMT Promotions.
Right. And also keep in mind, I mean, you don't necessarily go to a trade show to, you know, make sales there. It's more right. about, you know, exposure, brand building. And once you're there, once you're in that market, and once you want to play in that, you know, game, then you need to make sure to be present at those, you know, events, of course, because otherwise people are not going to, you know, think about you anymore. And but, you know, in most cases, you do get a lot of leads out of those trade shows. And that's the whole idea.
Now, are American trade shows different than European trade shows?
To a certain extent, yes.
A lot more drinking at the European trade shows, I think.
Probably so, yes.
Particularly the German trade shows.
I think, you know, European trade shows, especially, you know, European companies, they're more picky about their design overall. And I've heard this a lot that, you know, a lot of American trade shows, it's a little, you know, outdated when it comes to the booth design and people don't seem to care about it as much. But, you know, Europe, like, they always make sure to have a different booth every year and just different design.
Well,
and,
that's good information.
Yeah.
Good tip.
That's good to know. And so on this side of things, how does one position themselves to maybe be aware of opportunities of businesses that are coming from Germany that, you know, if as an American, maybe I want to partner with a successful German firm. Do I reach out to you? Or are you already? What's the best way to do that?
I mean, the best way is to contact us, of course, you know, directly. I mean, go to our website, you know, get the email address there. Now, again, we do have a larger network of, you know, people that we know. So in a lot of cases, you know, we do get clients from, you know, CPA firms that we work with or attorneys right. that we work with. And, you know, like they just, you know, contact us. Hey, you know, there's this, you know, company and they're thinking about coming over here. So let's, you know, go sit together and talk. And that's part of my business is a lot of networking, of course.
I'll bet. Another.
Yes, absolutely.
So let's share some contact information with our yes. listeners so they know how to get to you.
So basically, you just go to www.gatclp.com.
GATCLP.com.
Correct.
Anything yes. they want to know will be there.
Anything they want to know, you know, all the information is up there. But easiest way is, you know, just shoot me an email or give me a call. And, you know, we're always happy to, you know, sit down. And like I said, a lot of times I am in Europe, you know, doing some trips there. And it's always, you know, easy to meet up there as well. If there's some interest, you know. I'll fly anywhere.
I want to go on a trade show trip with him.
Just hang out with him.
Yeah, just hang. Learn yeah, about the trade
go.
Show.
You can live stream at the trade show. And, you know, come with
there
us.
You go. There, yeah. Yes. Set up at the trade show. Do the remote broadcasting. Right. That'd be fun, right?
You know that oral contracts are binding in America. You're aware of that?
That's right. What you just said.
Well, like I said, I'm going to bring my lawyer in the next time I told you.
Good stuff. Did you learn anything today, Lee?
A lot of stuff. Good crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guests this morning, Emmanuel Oterski, Steve French, and Grace Murphy, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.